This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Mark, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Welcome to your commentary box position, which you love and care for so much.
Yeah, thank you. I feel like in my fourth year, I'm completely equipped to hold forth about what's happening.
Is it a big movie week? What should we be looking forward to before four?
It's a fairly small movie week. There's Year One, there's Rudo e Cursi, there's Sunshine Cleaning. Oh, and there's the new Abbas Kiarostami movie, which I know you've been waiting for.
Right. What would be that called?
It would be called Shirin. What would be that called? Have we turned into Yoda? Oh. What would that be called? What would be that called?
What's the name of that film then?
The film Abbas Kiarostami. It's called Shirin. Why? And it's a film about people watching a film. It is actually a film of people watching a film, although they're not.
Sounds thrilling. Have you seen the Antichrist film yet?
Yes.
Is it any good? Okay, that'll do. You'll have to keep us for that.
That's a genuine.
Okay, so you're not quite sure. We have some movies to discuss as well. Sunshine Cleaning, Year One, various other bits and pieces. Not a classic week by the sound of it, but we'll make the most of
it. We will.
See what we've got, because there's some interesting stuff in the top 10 at 10. Last Chance Harvey.
Which I like. And, you know, it's Emma Thompson, who is always worth a price for admission. I mean, I think some people thought this was a little bit cheesy, but I liked it. And there is a moment in it in which Emma Thompson does that thing about going off and having a private breakdown, which is always worth seeing. I'm glad to see it's in the top 10, actually.
The Last House on the Left, is it 9?
As I said before, I don't know why you'd remake it, because the original said everything that there was to be said, but I wouldn't recommend anyone to go and see the original other than hardcore horror fans who are historically interested in seeing what is probably the nastiest film of the 1970s. I mean, I know you're not going to go rushing off to your DVD store to get it, but if you are going to see Last House on the Left, you might as well see the original.
Looking for Eric at 8.
Which, I'm glad it's gone into the top 10. There was a wonder about it. I mean, this is clearly going to be Ken Loach's big hit movie. It's funny, when it was first shown, people described it as a Ken Loach feel-good movie, and I really like it. It's kind of grown on me since I first saw it. I think the only really important thing to say is it's not just to do with Eric Cantona. I think Steve Evans is really at least half the charm of that film.
Star Trek's at 7?
Still great. Have you been yet?
Yes, of course I've been, as we've discussed it many times.
Okay.
Drag Me to Hell.
Or Drag Me to Helsinki.
Drag Me to Helsinki. Drag Me to Hull, something which we'll reenact later in the year.
As I was going from the train station to Wimbledon, I got on a bus which had a huge Drag Me to Hell poster on the side of it. I mean, how good to see a Sam Raimi horror movie doing so well for so long. I mean, a lot of horror movies go in at number one and then go out number 9, number 10 the next week. It's still holding in there because it's a good, decent, fairground romp. Raimi described it as being like a ghost train ride, and that's exactly what it is.
Angels and Demons at 5. Terminator Salvation is at number 4. Hang on, this is Adam in Stoke. Question for Mark. I went to see Terminator Salvation last week, but to my surprise, there was a parent and baby screening for the film. What's a parent and baby screening, and how can they allow a baby into a film like Terminator Salvation? How can a baby be expected to understand the chaos happening before him or her? I struggle to comprehend what is happening with the certification system in this country.
Okay, I take it that's ironic, so I'm not going to leap in.
One imagines that that is right.
I think the idea of a mother and baby screening of, or parent and baby screening of Terminator Salvation is actually very good.
Did you do mother and babies for Drag Me to Hell?
No, because that'll be 15. I think it can only be for... Oh, no, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong.
Mother and Babies for Antichrist?
Yeah, no, definitely not.
Night at the Museum 2 at 3.
Night at the Museum 1 was at least all of the gags. And no, this is Ricky Gervais is barely in it, but he's on the poster.
The Hangover at 2.
It's Dude, Where's My Car? Goes to Las Vegas, although every mainstream critic around other than me is falling over themselves to say, yeah, but you know what? It's the really... People are being the same way about it as they were about the wedding crashes.
This and might be you, mightn't it?
Well, I've had a lot of people write in recently saying that I don't get comedy. I don't get funny. And that they are fed up with hearing me saying that the new comedy out this week isn't as funny as it should be. But you know what? It isn't.
The UK's number one is Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen. Clearly lots of notice being taken of what you said, and everyone has just gone to see it anyway.
Yeah, but we did say that would happen, because what's happened is that films have become events and they've all become about the money in the box office, so it doesn't make any... I mean, loads of people have gone along and come out saying, yeah, it's terrible, which I just think is significant, because you said to me, well, everyone's going to go and see it, so you slagging it off is wrong. And I said, yeah, but they won't enjoy it. And you said, well, what do you mean they won't enjoy it? It is possible for people to go and see a film and not not enjoy it in their droves. And I suggest that right now the multiplexes are full of people not enjoying Transforminators 2.
A lot of people are going to see it, I think. James Taylor on this email saying...
James Taylor?
Well, indeed, of the James Taylor Quartet and the singer-songwriter.
Will he just call out my name if ever he needs me and I'll be there?
As a child of the 80s, I naturally grew up with Transformers, loved the cartoons, had a collection of the toys. When the first Transformers action movie came out, I went to see it, thought it was good fun, but didn't do enough for the fans. I will probably go and see Transformers 2 just because it's Transformers. Yeah. So I suspect
that's why
it's there.
But that's what's happening. And it is important to say that just because a film takes an enormous amount of money doesn't mean that an enormous amount of people enjoyed it. It means an enormous amount of people paid an enormous amount of money for it. But I think we've got to the point now with big blockbuster summer releases that people kind of just expect them to be not very good, but they have to be part of the experience. So there was a wonderful email exchange between Michael Bay and the studio in which Michael Bay accused the studio of not making it into the big event that it should be. Michael, it's Transformers 2.
Simon on this email, who says, Simon, GCSE English and half a BSE business study. I went to see Transformers, The Rise of the Fallen. Brace yourself, it's amazing. Now, I know the plot isn't going to move mountains and the script won't win awards, but while slamming it for not being a technical masterpiece, don't lose sight of average Joe going to the movies. Old school appeal mixed with fantastic CGI and a decent cast. We don't all go to analyse, some just go to be entertained.
No old school appeal. I mean, old school appeal would have been a 90-minute thing. Actually, a number of people have written in saying, did I see the animated Transformers movie before? Yes, of course, it was infinitely better and it was infinitely shorter. And the cast are terrible. Shia LaBeouf, that man is a charisma vacuum.
Give us something new then, if we're tempted by any of those.
Shall we talk about Year One? See, I'm being accused of every week there's a comedy that comes out and I say, well, it's not as funny as it ought to be, okay? So, Year One, it's the new movie from the stable of Jadapatapatapatapatapata. Right?
Not him again.
Yeah, him again. Right, Harold Ramis. So it's Jack Black and Michael Cera. And it's called Year One, and the poster has got them in loincloths looking like cavemen, OK? And it turns out that they are part of a hunter-gatherer tribe, that Jack Black is a hunter and Michael Cera is the gatherer, and neither of them are any good at either hunting or gathering. And then they go to a bit of a garden which has got forbidden fruit in it, and they eat the fruit of the forbidden tree, and so therefore it's the Garden of Eden. And then they get cast out of their tribe, and you're thinking, hang about a minute, exactly where in the evolutionary scale are we at the moment? They get
cast out. And how come Year One?
Yeah, exactly. And then they go to eat. They're out of Eden. They meet Cain and Abel, and then Cain, there's some slewing. And then after that, they go to Gomorrah, and in Gomorrah, they find themselves sentenced to death. Here's a clip.
For the crimes of blasphemy! For these and other crimes, the prisoners shall be stoned to death!
Wait! Can I make a suggestion?
What?
I think it would be fair if you let us choose who gets to stone us.
No!
That doesn't make any...
That guy!
This guy?
No. The shorter man right in front of him.
That's not... It's a kid. This is a kid.
So? You got something against kids? This guy hates kids?
My kid!
Kid hater?
No, they're our future! Come on!
All right. Hey, go ahead and...
Okay, I'm here.
That kid's got an arm.
There's two of us!
We found a witch. Can we burn her?
No, exactly. Exactly. Although, actually, wrong movie.
Life of Brian.
Yeah, Life of Brian. It's the stoning sequence. It's the Jehovah. All I said was a meal fit for Jehovah. Boom, ooh, who threw that? Are there any women here? And the really funny, well, funny peculiar as opposed to funny ha-ha. The non-funny ha-ha thing about Year One is that it isn't funny ha-ha and there isn't enough laughing in it. And it actually is a demonstration of how not laughingness there was. You know that thing when Woody Allen says that his wife divorced him on grounds of insufficient laughter? Insufficient. She said, I chortle, yeah. I chuckle, I sometimes guffaw. She divorces me on grounds of insufficient laughter. Well, I'm going to divorce Year One on the grounds of insufficient laughter. There was a moment in it when James King decided that he was so bored he had to go to the loo. And in order to go to the loo, he had to get past me, which involved briefly waking me up because I was falling asleep. Because it is, it's light watching. I mean, it's a Harold Ramis movie and a Jack Black movie and a Michael Cera movie, and I like Michael Cera, but it was like watching a bunch of Americans saying, you know those Monty Python movies that we all saw, that we all grew up with? Let's do a little bit like that. When they're being having the stones thrown at me, you think that's the Monty Python from Life of Brian. There's a load of stuff at the end of it about the non-existence of God, which is kind of like the last moment of Meaning of Life. You half expect the authorities to stand up and say, free Wodderick, when Oliver Platt is doing this kind of camp priest who's got this slightly lispy speech thing. It is simple. basically watching a load of Americans who obviously watch the Monty Python movies, thinking that somehow if you just reproduce that, it'll be inherently funny. The thing is, the Monty Python movies all meant something. Life of Brian, famously, you know, there was all the fuss about it being blasphemous. Life of Brian, which is an incredibly intelligent film, which is about the way in which religion has been contorted and turned on its head by its followers, and which is why anybody with two brain cells to rub together understands that it's not a blasphemous film. It's a film about the idea of blasphemy. Year One, on the other hand, is a film about some people wearing loincloths that sort of goes, well, yeah, remember that bit in the butt? Eden, yeah, Gomorrah, yeah, Cain and Abel. Apparently there was going to be a sequence in it in which Stanley Tucci played Noah, but they took it out after the failure of Bruce Almighty. I mean, that's how flimsy the idea is. It's just a bunch of guys sitting in a room saying, do you remember that? Do you remember that? Do you remember that? So no substance. No, plot doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's not like it's doing a satirical take on the history of Year One. And not enough laughter. Now, if one of those things had been fulfilled, if either it had a decent satirical intention or there had been sufficient laughter, I would have forgiven it. But insufficient laughter and insubstantiality, all you get in the end is people doing the Monty Python sketches from years ago. And you remember if you were ever on the bus to school and somebody said, did you see Monty Python last night? And then they started to do the sketches, but they'd always do it really badly.
Yeah, still it's, do that. Yeah. Still do that, actually.
Fine. Well, it's like that. But for 100 minutes with Jack Black. Jack Black. I mean, the problem with Jack Black is he's done some great acting in the past, but he's got to the point now and he's just got lazy. He just gets on screen and goes, I'm Jack Black, I'm Jack Black, I'm Jack Black. I mean, not actually those words, but metaphorically, that's what he's doing.
They could rather just watch School of Rock again.
Yes, which is him acting and is a really good story and has got real substance and really good jokes and works for all the family.
We were doing tennis player-related snacks earlier, which had been happening on Andy Murray's Twitter. I think he started it, actually. So we had Mardy Fishcakes and Novak Djokovic and things like that. Fernando Tabasco, we had Fred Perry Perry, we had Ivan Lentil, that kind of thing. If we had time, we could do tennis player-related movies, which I would chip in to start it going with the Cole Schreiber's daughter.
Very good. You see, if I knew who any of the names you just said
were... just been playing.
No, I understand that. That's the first gag that I got. I realise now that what we didn't do at the end of our Edinburgh live show, which must have been a disappointment to everybody, was we didn't rip off our sweaty...
Clothing
and throw it into the audience. Here, keep that as a souvenir. Why don't you?
No, that's true. That's true.
Can I just say that, did you know that in a former life, I hosted Channel 4 Goes to Glastonbury with Katie Puckrick, and you have never seen a man look less equipped to do a job than me standing in a field in Glastonbury saying, hey, we're in Glastonbury. Isn't it great? They did it once and never again.
Never invited you back. Andy Bradshaw on the Mother and Baby screenings, who said the only difference is they keep the sound at a slightly lower level. That, you know, they can show anything, but the sound is slightly lower and the lighting is slightly higher than normal. And our 10-month-year-old loved Star Trek when we took it. The Reverend Mark Nicholas, M-A-B-D.
Yeah.
Dear Monty and Python, sad but not surprised that Year One doesn't do Python well. For an unusual example of Americans who can do Python, try the Veggie Tales film by Phil Vischer. Kiddies animated vegetables that get Python to a T. Witness the fish slapping antics of the Ninevites.
I haven't seen that. That sounds great. What's it called?
Veggie Tales.
Veggie Tales?
Yeah, they're kind of Sunday school things.
Oh, I don't know them. Yeah. Okay.
Well, Reverend Mark Nicholas, if you could send Mark a copy, that would be amazing.
And how unusual, I don't know it, what with me being a Sunday school teacher,
exactly,
according to The Guardian.
As exclusively revealed incorrectly. So what else is new, Mark?
Well, there are two films we can do without doing clips because they're both in foreign languages. Firstly, Rudo y Cursi, which is it reunites Gael García Bernal and Diego Luna, who you will remember were together in Y Tu Mama Tambien, which was directed by Alfonso Cuarón, who went on to do the best of the Potter movies, Azkaban. I still think that is the best of the Potter movies.
Best of the books, which also helped.
Yeah, I'm very, very near the end of the last book. I'm on the chapter now which begins the Battle of Hogwarts. I know I'm bringing up the... Don't. I don't want to know. And also, my son will be listening, and if you spoil it for him, you aren't coming to the barn party, OK?
Well, it turns out...
Don't!
You'll never believe
okay,
it.
OK, so...
The underwater secret...
Thank you. Now we have Gael García Bernal and Diego Luna together again, now produced by Alfonso Cuarón, directed by Carlos Cuarón, who I believe is Alfonso Cuarón's brother, and co-produced by Guillermo del Toro. And the story is Rudo y Cursi, two brothers. Their nicknames mean rough and corny, or rough and smooth, I think. And
there's a big difference in corny and smooth.
No, but I think there's something's getting lost in translation in just the rough and corny.
Like it, yeah,
exactly.
Rough and corny.
One of them's rough. The other one's a ladies' man. One of them wants to be a footballer. The other one essentially wants to be a pop star. Wants to be a singer. They are both working on a banana plantation. A football scout comes along, says, "I can take only one of you." And the one of them that really wants to be a footballer says, "Okay, I'm going to be the one that goes. So what we're going to do is I'll be in goal." They decide to do a penalty kick out to decide who's going to go. He says, "Shoot to the left." Of course, he doesn't say stage left or your left. Consequently, ball goes the wrong way. The wrong brother goes off, sets in motion a rivalry which lasts as the brothers then both have successful football careers. One of them more of a footballer than the other. The other one, the Gael Garcia Bernal character, more interested in playing the squeeze box, becoming a pop star, going out with a television icon and essentially letting the game... Because it's sort of like kind of Georgie Best figure. More interested in the fashion and the...
I'm almost believing that you're talking about football and...
I know, but
lost.
So clearly, what's interesting about the film is, firstly, it's a football film that I got and understood, because like all the best football films and like all the best sport films, it isn't about football and it isn't about sport. What it's actually about is about two brothers and a rivalry between them which goes through the generations. Here's my issue with it. This is the advert for the film, which I'm showing to you. I'll show it to the camera, but there you can't see
it. We are filming this, so you will be able to watch something later.
Okay, but it says Rudo y Cursi, Rudo and Cursi, ampersand. And what it then says is one of the funniest indie movies of the year, rowdy and hilarious, an absolute delight. Now, I like the film. I thought the film was interesting. I just don't think it was one of the most hilarious indie comedies of the year and a rowdy delight. What it was a sort of human drama about two brothers with a sort of semi-tragic conclusion that you liked because you believed in the characters and you thought the characters were interesting characters. But it's not laugh-out-loud funny. I mean, there are some comedy moments in it, but it would be tragicomic at the very best. And it is interesting how whenever you have a movie like this in which it's slightly difficult to pigeonhole, the tendency is always to say it's a comedy, because it's almost like if you say to somebody it's a comedy, they think, oh, well, fine, we'll go and see it. Because what you really mean is it's a foreign language film about two brothers having a rivalry, which is played out about football, but it's nothing to do with football. How are we going to sell that? I know, let's say it's a rip-roaring comedy. It's a very strange thing, and it's not a rip-roaring comedy, but it is a decent movie. The other thing, which I know you're waiting for me to talk about, is Shirin, which is the new movie by Abbas Kiarostami. And here's what it is. It is a selection of shots. I can actually do the film for you, okay, if you're watching this.
Are you going to act it out?
Yeah.
Are you going to mime it?
It's just, well, I'm not a woman, so that's the key problem.
Yes.
Okay. Because what it is a film playing of a famous 12th century legend, allegedly. Although Kiarostami says, what's the story of the film is not important. What's important is the story of the audience. And what we get for 90, 100 minutes is shots of women watching the film. And it goes like this.
Well, you're just looking at me.
Exactly, I'm just looking at you. Okay? And then another woman. I'm still just looking
exactly
at you.
Yeah,
yeah. And then somebody else.
Well, that's just rubbish.
And then there's some crying. Now, but what's really fascinating
is they're crying.
They're not, because what you're also hearing is you're hearing the soundtrack of the film and you're hearing the story of the film, although it turns out that, of course, actually all the women you're watching, they're pretty famous actors. I mean, at one point it's Juliette Binoche, who you recognise, I mean, we would recognise, but everyone else in it is an acclaimed actress anyway. And they are acting an audience watching a film which they're not watching, because it turns out that Kiarostami put the sort of the film soundtrack on afterwards. So it is the strangest... And apparently, you know, in conception, it's an interesting idea. You know, it's a film about watching people watching a film that doesn't exist. But I have to admit that in my head, a wrestling match was going on, because one half of me was going...
Art house nonsense.
Well, no, hold on. One half of me was going, I'm sorry, I just touched your knee. In a world in which Michael Bay can spend 2.5 hours... In a world of Michael Bay showing you everything. The idea of a film that shows you nothing at all is quite
appealing at all.
Interesting. But after 10 minutes... You think, you know, I feel the same way about this as I felt about Zidane. When I realised that what it was simply going to be a film of the football match, I kind of started to lose patience. So whereas my head went with it, my heart started to worry about the shopping. And also, it was made slightly more problematic by the fact that I knew in advance that Kiarostami had said that the story of the film isn't important. So I kind of stopped following the story of the film and ended up just watching a succession of faces and waiting for Juliette Binoche to turn up. And then Juliette Binoche turned up, and then she went away, and then she came back and cried, and then the film ended.
Right. Well, at least that was a good bit.
Yes. So I'm glad he's done it. I'm glad I've seen it. I can't say I'm going to be watching it again. And if it's that or Michael Bay... Give me the Keir Starmer.
Let's hope it's not
because it's shorter.
And just ahead of the next review on our tennis player related movies, these are very good and probably stuff that you might have heard of.
Okay, Wimbledon.
Steve the Trucker, Who Framed Roger Federer?
Yeah, I've heard of him.
Like that,
because he was just on there, wasn't he?
Borg on the 4th of July.
Is that Bjorn?
Anne Jones and the Temple of Doom. Now, all of those are classic. We need to keep this up and running. So next week, because we're also here next Friday, so we need to do movie-related tennis players. We might not have time to fit many more in, as it's 5 minutes to 4 o'clock.
Billie Jean King of Egypt?
That's not bad.
That's actually not bad, is it?
That's your era.
Yes,
as well.
It is, yeah.
Pick us something else that's new.
Shall we do Sunshine Cleaning?
Why not?
Okay, so Sunshine Cleaning, from the producers of Little Miss Sunshine. Let's do the main plot. Main story is two sisters, both messed up, are trying to find their way in the world. One of them is a former prom queen, a former sort of, you know, high school cheerleader, who has not turned out to be the successful young woman that she wants to be, but ends up cleaning the houses of the other people that she went to school with. And rather than marrying the jock hero character, she's ended up having an affair with the jock hero character, who has married somebody else. The jock hero character, however, has turned out to be a cop, and it turns out early on that he attends a crime scene and finds out that cleaning up after crimes is a lucrative business. And he says to her, you know what? You should try getting into this. And she does. Here's a clip.
We are doing some post-mortem kind of specialized cleanup stuff. And we had this really difficult...
Smelly.
Really smelly job where this woman had died and she had been there for a while. And
it's a decomp.
Yes, a decomp.
Follow me.
It's a lingo, I guess.
You have your general purpose cleaners, your extraction cleaners, your odor control, disinfectants, stain removers, and shampoos. Steamers, buffers, foggers, that kind of stuff's right here for rent or purchase. And quick absorbing sawdust. It's good for vomit. Personal protective gear is right there. If you have any questions, just come find me.
So, poster says, from the producers of Little Miss Sunshine, has the word sunshine in the title. Has Alan Arkin as a curmudgeonly old guy who develops a relationship with a young kid who is kind of misunderstood. And from the outside, you think, hold on a minute, with this, we are essentially being given something which says, you know that movie that you really liked before, that movie that was the odd independent art house hit that ended up being nominated for best film, didn't it? I mean, it was the outside. We're going to do that again. And I was kind of quite worried about that. In fact, it turned out to be a lot better than I had expected for a number of reasons. Firstly, both Amy Adams and Emily Blunt, who are the leads in it, are very, very good and are clearly enjoying the opportunity to play something raw, to do something that's kind of slightly edgier than perhaps they've been given the chance to do in mainstream movies. And they're both responding very well to the material. I mean, the material itself sort of wanders and wibbles around a little bit and sort of loses the plot, particularly, oddly enough, in relation to the material that is the Alan Arkin stuff, which seems to have been put in after the fact, because it's almost like the producers went, I know, Little Miss Sunshine did well, let's get the word, let's get the guy, let's get the thing, let's attempt to reproduce it. But strangely, it's the stuff that looks like it is somehow a leftover bit from Little Miss Sunshine that is the stuff that doesn't work. The stuff that does work is the central stuff about the two girls finding a career in this, you know, very strange occupation of cleaning up after crime scenes and somehow finding their role in life through doing something which neither of them had expected to do. And peculiarly enough, having gone into it thinking I'm just going to be sold yet another indie pup and I'm just going to be subjected to somebody attempting to rehash an offbeat hit, which is never a good idea because cult hits and offbeat hits are always things that happen by accident. And whenever somebody sits down and attempts to reproduce that formula, it's always bad. In the case of Sunshine Cleaning, I have to say I enjoyed it. And for me, it was film of the week because it was, you know, it exceeded my expectations. I enjoyed watching the characters. I mean, I don't think it's a flawless movie. I think there's lots and lots of things wrong with it. And I think it could have lost 20 minutes of its running time. And there's a whole character that could have been taken out. But for at least an hour and 10 minutes of it, I enjoyed watching the performances and thought, you know what? That is actually attempting to tell a story in a way that isn't just simply robots hitting each other or a camera looking at people watching a story that I've been told by the director isn't interesting.
See, no one's going to see that. No one's going to watch that. It's such a...
No one's going to watch... Sheeran.
Yeah, no, why would anyone think, you know what, it's Friday night, I've got £6.50 available, well, I'm going to go and watch a bunch of people watching a movie who aren't watching a movie.
Well, that's not true, because if you're interested in the idea of cinema, I guarantee you, for example, that Mark Cousins will go and watch it and will really, really enjoy it and will find interesting things to say about it. And what I'm trying to say is I admire the intent. I admire the idea. Obviously, it's a very limited release, but in the end, it's probably better being shown in an art gallery rather than in a cinema, which is exactly what I said about Zidane, incidentally. I have no problem with Zidane as an art installation. Actually, that's not true. I do have some problems with Zidane as an art installation, but in the case of Sheeran, I don't have any of those problems. But in the case of you want to go and see the movie of the week, for me, Sunshine Cleaning, despite the fact that there are a lot of things wrong with Sunshine Cleaning, because it was better than I expected it to be.
Who's Afraid of Virginia Wade?
Yes, OK, I get that.
Being John McEnroe.
Get that.
You won't get this one, but I do quite like it from James Barkley in Teddington. Dear Randall and Hopkirk, deceased, how about Patang Yankeathavong?
Well, I got the Patang Yang, but what's the...
Yankeathavong, who's one of the best British women's tennis players. That's comparative, but she is the best British women's tennis player.
OK.
She hasn't had a great Wimbledon.
Great. So, could she beat Paul Bettany?
But by the time you've actually explained Patang Yankeathavong, it kind of has disappeared.
Yeah.
However, we will continue. It's a bit like hitting someone over the head with a loaf of bread. But the tennis player-related movies, we will continue into next week. Mark, thank you very much indeed. Your Wimbledon stint for this week is over.
Thank you. But can I just say I did enjoy watching the tennis for the first time.
Next week, you're going to be on at midday, just an advance warning.
To me, rather than the audience.
To you. Just so that you can remember. Okay. And to everybody else, because of the tennis, we think the best place to do it is going to be midday next Friday for a full hour uninterrupted.
Well, is there a very boring match on then?
No. There's not a very boring match. It's Friday. We're getting to the sharp end. It could well be Andy Murray in the semi-final.
OK. So there's a boring match on at 12.
Men's.
I understand. I understand the coded thing there.
No.
Go on, who's playing at 12?
No.
Who have you insulted?
There's no tennis at 12.
Yeah, that's what you say.
Hence, it's very safe to put you on.
OK.
You understand?
Yeah.
OK. Mark, thanks very much indeed.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Hello, me again. To watch my latest reviews, take a trip to www.bbc.co.uk/Mark Kermode for the Kermode Uncut blog.